My name is Jackie Brolsma. I'm the outgoing program associate here at Holden. And tonight's forum is entitled, "And the Dance Goes On, Men and Women, Leaders, Followers, Partners," sort of question mark. And just a word about forums at Holden. Generally, forums are an opportunity to invite more conversation and dialogue around an issue. It's not meant to be a presentation, but rather a chance for lively discussion, controversial, and everybody is free to express their point of view, minority or majority. And so we really want that to happen tonight. So what we'll be doing is having four people to have a response or offer a response, 3 minutes or so, on their particular perspective on the issue. And then we'll open it up to the group, and we'll try to end promptly at 9:30, even though there might be a great conversation going on. We'll hope that that will continue in other kinds of ways in the village. So we've posed some questions, three of them. Our role's changing. Obviously, if we're having the title be what it is, we must think they might be. And what do I think about that? What are the issues and points of tension on the issue? And is it, or how is it maybe perhaps related to faith? Our panelists tonight are people who are willing to respond. Are Bill Kate, one of our teaching staff here this week, doing stuff on community. Jan Nairn, who is a long-term staff member here at Holden and runs the Resource Center. Lowell, Harvey. I can't believe I forgot that. Who is also one of our staff working in Tate Ministry, and Verlon Brown, our village pastor. So, without any more, I'll let them begin. And I think we'll start with Jan.
Oh, you changed it.
Did I change it? No, I did. So we're starting with Lowell.
Oh,
yes, that's right.
So okay. One's as good as the other.
Go ahead.
I'm supposed to represent the radical feminist point of view, which is kind of ironic because I think most of my friends would consider me rather mild. Well, most of my female friends would consider me rather mild. I'm 34 years old. And I don't mind telling you I'm 34 years old, which is probably a result of the women's movement, which means I was 7 years old in 1963 when Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, was published. That was is generally considered the beginning of the modern feminist movement. But still, I grew up with a father who told me and my sisters that men could do everything better than women could do them, except have babies. And that women should stay at home. This even though my mother was a nurse and worked outside of the home most of her married life, and the fact that my father's mother was a hard-headed businesswoman. If I had been a young woman in the 1950s instead of a baby in the 1950s, I would have been a sort of pariah by this time because I am 34 and not married and childless. I would have been something probably to be pitied and perhaps something rather suspect. I suspect that I'm a different sort of pariah now because I'm not on the career track in some big impressive company, and I suppose that's the modern expectation or the thing that's considered desirable. And if I had been a young woman in the 1950s, I think if I had let it be known how intelligent I am, I would have gotten a lot of flack for that. I probably would have been considered something of a freak, or people would have complimented me by saying that I think like a man. I am a feminist, and I am glad I'm living now and not then. And I'd like to say that I'm a little sorry that I'm living now and not in a better future, but I'm not convinced that the future is going to keep getting better for women. It doesn't always work that way, and you can look back on history and see that. Nevertheless, I think that most of my working relationships with men have been fairly traditional. I think that they have mostly been in power positions. And I've mostly, most of my adult life, done office work and been considered to be of inferior mentality simply because I'm sitting behind a keyboard of some sort. My relationships, my personal relationships with men have been somewhat non-traditional, I think. And yet the traditional still crops up. I had a sweetheart for many, many years whom I would ask to dinner, and I would make dinner. And it took me quite a while to realize that when he asked me to dinner at his place, I cooked dinner. It just creeps in. I'm supposed to be answering these three questions. I can do that very quickly. Are roles changing, and what do I think about that? Yes, they're changing. I don't think they're changing enough or fast enough, at least not to suit me. What are the issues, the points of tension? Three sprang to mind really quickly. Housework, work outside of the home, and sex. And I mean sex as a broader issue, sexuality. And three, is this a faith issue? For me, it's an issue of faith in myself. Okay, I'm done.
Okay, thank you. Bill?
My attitude on the subject is a result of a lot of pain, which I was self-inflicted. I recall when I was elected president of the Church Council of Greater Seattle in 1970, we had four women on our board of directors out of some 35. And about a year after that, I was there, a women and religion coalition came with a demand of the council. And I said to them, as they approached five women, I said, "Who is your chairman?" You don't get it? And I immediately was set aside for special education. I also was fortunate to be married to a woman who was very sensitive on this issue. I have five daughters and one son, so I never had a chance. But the way I feel about it, and by the way, I did go with Jan to the International Women's Year in Mexico City, and some other places, and I made up my mind a long time ago I was going to be on the winning team, which is with the women. I believe, in answer to the first question, I think, are the roles changing? And all I can say is yes, and it's about time. For I see women manifesting in the movement the values, the vitality, that will bring this old world around to some sense of sensibility. For I see the values that men have maintained in our patriarchal society as being the kind of values that are killing us, killing women, men, and children, all of us. Second question, what are the issues of point and tension? I would say to that man's world is being challenged. And this tension that we are now experiencing is at points where women are asking for justice. And finally, is this a faith issue? St. Paul, grasping, I think, the nature of the gospel, he never saw Jesus, we are told, but he, in spite of that, he grasped the essence of the gospel in that. And he said, "In Christ Jesus, neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, we are all one in Christ Jesus." So it just makes common sense. Men and women created by God, we live in the same world, we are equal people, and that the church should be the first group of people to recognize that fact and to manifest that fact in its own life.
Thank you. Jan?
Well, I was, I think, invited on this panel to represent a different point of view and, in fact, to be middle-aged, which I am. I'm 13 years older than Lowell. feminism and I got off to a bad start. My initial reaction to the question, are roles changing, is can I give a simple yes or no answer to that, because it seemed pretty obvious to me, obviously they are. How I feel about it might be slightly different. So far, to me, feminism has been far too much, and I hopefully this has been changing in more recent years, but certainly in the beginning years, was far too much the fight for the right to be masculine, and not enough attention had been given in the past, and in fact so far, to what it would mean to value equally feminine traits, and what it would mean to have our world value traditional feminine roles, and for those roles to be given equal status in our society. It seems to me that it was a race to see who could unload responsibilities faster than the other. And mainly those responsibilities were in the area of family and housekeeping. I've been asked by Carol several times to read a poem that she was partially responsible for writing, and I believe she actually wrote this part of it that I think sums it up. In God's image am I made, and yet when you ask me what I do, and I answer by saying that I am a mother, that I don't work outside of the home, but that I stay home to take care of my children, you say, oh, and our conversation ends, and you no longer find me interesting and worth your time. And yet, in God's image am I made. Feminism hit New Zealand, where I was living at the time, about 10 years after I think began in the United States. Unfortunately, about the time I was leaving a career of teaching and beginning a career of motherhood, and I wasn't too happy to be told that I wasn't much value. And I got pretty unhappy with feminism, and I do accept strongly that the role should change. I do feel that sooner or later someone in our society is going to have to take responsibility for the home and for rearing children. I'm not sure that our current arrangements for that are working very well. And I think the evidence is out there to be very, very clearly seen. I only hope that in response to the coming economic crisis, and I believe there is going to be one, and the need in our changing lifestyles for somebody to take on this responsibility, that the person who takes on that responsibility, be they male or female, is given equal status for doing that. I firmly believe that in every household, however that household is constituted, that someone is going to have to accept very soon the responsibility of child rearing, nurturing, and care for the family. As to the points of tension, I believe they're pretty common ones. I'm not sure if I would define them the same way. Our society is one in which economic issues are very important. Who gets the jobs? And if women are out there displacing men in jobs, there's bound to be a lot of tension. Also, our society is one of extreme competition. So if competition is there between men and women, there's bound to be a lot of tension. Those two things alone could account for the tensions in this. However, I think even more they probably relate to uncertainty of what roles are to be. Our society does a very poor job, I think, of helping us reach our identities. We have a very prolonged adolescence. Part of that adolescence is in defining our role. And when we had a clear sex role to follow, at least we had that much clear cut. Now we no longer have that. So I think the uncertainty of what role we are to play plays a large part in the tensions. As to it being a faith issue, I couldn't have said it better. I certainly believe that Christ, to Paul and Christ, made it very clear that this has got to be a faith issue. I still maintain that if Christ really wanted to make a statement with Mary and Martha, he should have been out in the kitchen making a salad. However, I do believe it's a faith issue. One aspect of the faith issue has been, of course, the inclusive language question, and I have a fairly divergent opinion on that as well. I think to some extent it's a red herring. I think there are other societies in which women have been able to accept, to take on non-traditional, what we would call non-traditional roles, rather more easily in the United States. And I think those societies haven't been too worried about the language they use to describe it. Primarily, however, on the inclusive language question, I was a history teacher and an English teacher before I was a mother. And I firmly believe in the integrity of the written text. And I firmly believe that we should be writing inclusive stuff, but that we should leave other people's works of art intact. As a historian, I firmly believe that if we rewrite history, and a good deal of what we've been doing in the name of inclusive language is rewriting history, that we will no longer be in a position to understand history and to have that history inform us and to help us to come to new understanding and to overcome some of the prejudices of the past.
Thank you, Dan. Devon.
I guess there was a time when I thought I was a feminist, but I'm not. I mean, I can't. At a certain point, I can't really relate to women's issues anymore. And I think it's because it's just not what I am as a man. I just think that men are different than women. I think we spend a lot of time blaming one another for not being more like we are. I think a lot of the battle is going on over blaming and name calling, and that's not the issue. The issue is to sit down, figure out what the differences are, and try to work something within that. Within those differences. I think basically I think a lot of men out there don't like women, and I'm not sure where that comes from. And a lot of women out there are afraid of men, and I know where that comes from. I know that the statistics on violence against women, against various forms of sexual abuse, are real high. Depending on what statistic you read, 3 out of 5 to 4 out of 5 women have been sexually abused. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, that's a horrendous thing to look at. And I think that a lot of the hate that men feel towards, I mean, that men feel coming from women, a lot of the name calling and a lot of the fear and a lot of just the plain old rejection, I think we honestly deserve, because we have heaped a lot of violence on women. That's what men resort to with each other when we're threatened or angry, is physical violence, and we don't seem to be able to turn it off when it comes to women either. And I think until that is worked out, I don't see much. I think men have a lot of payback coming our way for that. And I don't know when that's gonna go away, when we could actually talk about the differences and work out, you know, some differences. Katharine Hepburn said that she didn't think that men and women should marry, especially if they don't intend to have children, that they should live next door to each other and just visit from time to time. But she also said at a certain age she decided to live as a man, as a selfish man, and just you know, just worry about her career, and she decided not to have children, and that's what she did. I think a lot of these issues to me reaches its focal point in marriage. I think marriage should be changed. I think marriage doesn't work anymore. A lot of that has to do with economic pressures. My wife and I, on a pastor's salary and what she was making, couldn't afford to buy a home. We don't come from money. We don't have parents to loan us money to buy a home. The idea of us going somewhere, becoming a little nuclear family and raising our children is difficult in today's society with the whole money issue. And I think maybe society is, whether we like it or not, leaning more and more towards mixed families and communal type living, all of that sort of thing. As for the questions, let's see, the first one is, are roles changing and what do I think about them? Yes, I think roles are definitely changing. And what I think about them, I agree with Bill, I think it's about time. But I honestly believe that the power that men have, we're not going to give up. It's going to have to be taken away from us. And how women are going to do that, I do not know. I guess I'll just have to wait and see. And I don't think that's going to be very pretty. But that's the way I feel about it. What are the issues and points of tension? I think the big issues and the points of tension is the violence that men don't seem to have any problems of doing to one another, their wives, their girlfriends, their children. To me, that's a big point. Any woman you can talk to, if she will open up, and women know this better than men know this, have some violence that men have inflicted on them in the past. I think that's a real point of tension, and until women trust that we're not going to resort to violence, I don't think I don't think we're ever going to be trusted, and I don't think this issue will get close to being settled. And the last question, is it a faith issue? Well, of course it's a faith issue. Anytime you use another person, take advantage of another person, inflict harm on another person, it's a faith issue. It's a terrible lack of faith in humanity and our ability as people to sit down and work out a better way of doing things.
Okay, this is a time when we open it up to you to respond to the questions or to some point that the panelists have made. And the great things about Forums at Holden is that we don't have to come to any conclusion or resolve anything tonight. We can just all put forth our ideas and do that in a spirit of love and grace and respect. So I invite any of you to make comments. Sure.
I can't remember her name now either.
Lo.
Okay. You mentioned that you sat behind the desk, a switchboard.
Keyboard.
And so you are nothing. Who made you feel like nothing?
I said that the men for whom I worked considered me
okay,
not
I, did, I didn't grasp that it was men. I thought that... that's what I wanted to know. If those men that made you feel that way, or a group of people made you feel that way, or what?
Or if Lowell made you feel that way?
No, I don't think I'm nothing. But one can't help picking up certain attitudes. And it's not just because I work at a desk or whatever. I'm part of the problem is... I think this is probably true of all women to a certain degree. We're never treated as if we're fully grown up. And this is especially true for a small woman, like me, for the purposes, for the benefit of our listening audience, I'm about 5 feet, 1 inch, and a trim 110. Well, what do they know? They'll never hear it.
And she looks great.
Thank you. I'm much younger than 2 years. I rarely, it's difficult for me to get treated like an adult. If I walk into a public building, a city hall or a museum, I ask the security guard or whatever for directions. And what I get is, okay, sweetheart, just go down this hall and be the first left. And I'm not a child, and what I've had to do, I think, to counteract that is be mean. Because from my point of view, if I'm treated as if I'm cute, what I think is that how you can translate the word cute is it breaks down into two components. One is you're talking about some creature or thing that does not have to be taken seriously. And the second thing is you do not have to respect its boundaries. So that if you find a small animal cute, you can just pick it up and you can just love it to pieces, even if it's struggling and trying to get away. And if, as a woman, I am considered cute, I'm not taken seriously. And one way to avoid being considered cute really fast is to be mean. Because then that breaks away half of it. I am not considered non-threatening anymore. And so that breaks apart the whole concept. And I'm treated as strange, maybe, but not at least something that has to be considered.
Is it Lou?
Low.
We came in late, I'm sorry.
It's okay, we'll get it right next time.
Okay. I don't really think it's just because you're small in stature, because I'm large in stature. I'm 5'8½", and I have been since I was 12 years old. And I get sometimes the same treatment. And I'm older. I'm mature. I walked into the City Hall in Palm Springs and I tried to do a job for which I felt I was fully trained from not only what I think, but my background of my father being a builder, my sister an architect, and I was treated like a bubblehead. I was sent to 5 different departments, from the building to the engineering, blah, 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 and finally the last man sent me back to the building. And it was though, what are you here doing this for, lady? You shouldn't be here. This is not your field. So I don't really think it's your size, Lo. And I think being small sometimes even carries an advantage. nobody wants to help a tall girl with something because they think she's big and strong. Whereas if you really need help with something, you know, a tall lady like myself shouldn't. They will help you, whereas sometimes they wouldn't help me or a tall girl, and I might need it more physically than you do. And lastly, I don't know if you know it, but the woman that finally got the Women's Army Corps to be regular Army, you know, originally it was WAAC, Women's Auxiliary Army Corps during the war, the woman that finally spearheaded and went before Congress and finally went to General Eisenhower and got the wax was a little short woman. When she first went in, they called her Half Pint. And she had to work doubly hard to prove to them that Half Pint could even be a wax. So I don't really think it's small in stature. I just think it's the particular people you've had to deal with that maybe have given you that.
But you say you've been dealing. Do you think for you it has just simply been an issue of being female then?
Well, I think that particular thing, yes, that I was a female, because then a friend of mine who was a man went in and we got the job done immediately. You know, I stood behind him. And it was really my project of building, but he got it for me. So mine was not stature, mine was feminism, you know. So I think really that your problem is dealing with the wrong people.
But there are so many of them.
Annie.
Well, Jermaine Greer has sort of extends this situation that Lo's talking about and that you're talking about. And she she was trying to answer the question, why, where are the great women artists? And what she came up with was a surmise that what happens, what has happened historically with women, when they have shown ability as artists, as painters or drawers in this case, but I think we could extend this to when women have shown ability as writers or as musicians or as architects or as minds, they have been patted on the back and said, that's lovely, dear. Nobody has said, well, that's good. That shows some talent. Now you've got to get some technique. Now you've got to go to school. Now you've got to go to the conservatory. Now you've got to pitch yourself in competition against people who are even better than yourself so that you get to be really good. So they've just been approved for what they could do being, in effect, cute.
Mm-hmm. That brings up something that concerns me, and I think it was part of the conversation a little bit earlier. Maybe what Verlon talked about in terms of violence, and that women are not going to find their place except by taking the power. One of the things that concerns me coming out of church-wide structure is that some of the finest women, and I count myself in that, I know have been forced into a situation to co-opt or be co-opted so that you are in competition to be in a place of power. Well, I don't think the model is so wonderful in the first place mm-hmm. that men have created. And why should I have to fight and be competitive and force my way into a situation where they finally respect me as a woman mm-hmm. for the gifts that I have? So from what Jan had to say in terms of what gifts women have to bring, it concerns me that so many women that I know have either become that which they're not happy with in the first place, or have left, like I did. So that's one point. The other concern that I have, and I would take some contention with as far as Jan's concerned, is I agree with the issue of rewriting history, but what things have been left out of history? Mm-hmm. You know, as we go through the roles of the names of people who've affected history, they're usually white males. Mm-hmm. What happened to the women? That's what true. Happened to the people of color? The people whose stories are equally as important. Mm-hmm. And if it means writing an entire series of our stories, or whatever you want to call it, our stories, mm-hmm. then let's do that. But I'm concerned when we say we can't rewrite history. Yes, we can. That information is there. Those stories are there. Those are people who should affect us and be models for future. So.
You know, my feeling is that that the victor always, the one with power, always writes history.
That's the history book.
That's right.
And I agree with Verlon that women have to seize the power because men are not going to give it to them. If you look at it down through history, no one has ever given up power until it must be taken from them. And if you wait for us men to give it to you, you're going to wait a long time. That's the way I feel about it. And the other thing I see, just in the discussion, we make everything individual and personal. But we're talking about a whole system of power, of way in doing business that's been called a patriarchy, which goes down for 5,000 years. See what I mean? And we're saying that it is contrary to the gospel. It's contrary to the gospel because it does treat certain people as less human beings. Therefore, we have to, as a church, who have always, well, should always, have stood with the underdog and the powerless, we should be standing with women so they can get the kind of power they need to realize a few things. That's why I think we come in as a church.
What do you do with a church council, of which I am chairman? I have two men on it and 12 women.
The women always live long.
Don't have the power.
Who's the chair?
Pardon me?
Who's the chair?
I am. By their election.
Betty, you had your hand up.
A couple things I was going to come back and I have the article, why were there no women parties?
Oh.
Their answer is, there were, but they were not, we weren't informed about them in books when they weren't included in the history books. And now we're, if it weren't for the women's movement, we would not have reclaimed and brought this history forward. I have the article, I found it if anybody wants to read it. And then I just want to refer to when we said our roles changing, nobody elaborated too far on it. We got on women. I think it's very wonderful that it's been changing for men, and they are being given their rightful place in the home to be more nurturing, to be real fathers to the children, and to be their whole personality and not have to be just the authoritarian father and the macho image. And if this change is coming, then maybe we won't have to worry about the power struggle, and that this will be part of it, which is suggesting the state. It's a real change for both, and I think it's been a good change in the male too.
You started to speak, I think.
I just wanted to underline something that Jan said that that I felt so strongly, that when the feminist movement started, I didn't feel much sympathy with it to start with. I, as far as I was concerned, was equal. There wasn't any question about it. And too many women were pretending to be men. They weren't being proud of women. And I think it is starting to go back to some balance in that now. But the pride in developing what was special about women got lost there somewhere. And I think we need to hang on to that because it's very important.
It seems like to me the first changes are always cosmetic. I mean, you know, you watch TV, it's like the exercise boom. You know, all these good looking people drinking juice and wearing Nikes and that. And, but most of America is still sitting around watching TV and eating chips. You know? But gradually, it's changing now. Gradually, more and more people are walking and exercising. I think it's the same way with women. The first movement was always cosmetic. I mean, who was it, Fifth Avenue, Second Avenue, one of them. They always pick up on it and then make money off of it to sell products. But the issue is only addressed at a cosmetic level.
No, I think that my own observation on the things that have happened over the last 20 years, I guess, as I've seen it, are questions that come to mind. In particular, I think questions that have come to my mind in the last couple of years. And I think that these are questions that I haven't heard any men talk about really yet, but kind of questions that will need to be coming to the mind before a change takes place. One of them is, what do you see when you really look at the behavior of women that's lacking in your life? And for example, one of the observations that I would make that if you look at the church, how many organizations in the church are there for men who are trying to cope with a particular kind of problem, a difficult problem, death, a child is on drugs. What kind of a tie do you have with another male? When I watch women, a lot of times they can be talking about things that are really important to them. When is the last time that you sat down with a friend and talked about something that was really important to you. I think that looking at those kind of roles, those differences between us, and realizing how important those differences are to the female, for example, how important it is to them to have really good relationships, meaningful relationships with another woman, and have support groups that are really meaningful, that are really supportive. Those are the kinds of things that I look at and I see missing in our culture for men. Why are they violent? I think that's one of the reasons why they're violent.
Thank you. Yeah.
Oh, I wanted to speak a little bit to what Catherine was talking about on history. Ross Heide is doing this archives thing, and he's talking about oral history, which is really interesting. The history books of my day, when I was going to school, were boring. There was nothing human interest in it. And certainly we didn't have any black cowboys in it. And there's a lot of history that's left out. And I see no reason why we can't go back and get a lot of this oral history. And I think the history classes would be much more interesting today than they were when I went to school if they did this. And so I do think you don't want to change the things that happen. What you're doing is adding to it to make it true of the times, more true what really happened at that time. There were things that were left out that people can still give to us.
I'd like to talk briefly, I hope, about what Jan was saying about when she first heard about feminism and how it left her out. I think that the feminist movement, the modern feminist movement, was largely a white middle class movement, and it did leave out a lot of people and alienate a lot of women, and that's a shame. And I hope it's not doing that, or not doing that nearly so much now. A couple of years ago, Gloria Steinem wrote an excellent essay in which she said that she was having lunch with some very important man who was very high up in a well-known company. And he said to her, "Well, what are you going to do now?" And she said, "Well, what do you mean?" And he said, "Well, now, you know, feminism, you accomplished your goal, and so what are you going to move on to now?" And she said, how do you mean that we've accomplished our goal?" And he said, "Well, you've got women in the workforce now, and some moving up." And she said, "Well," she said she could have said a lot of things to him, but what she did say to him was, "Well, do you think that men are doing and taking responsibility for an equal amount of housework and childcare? Same as women?" And he said, "My God, is that what you want? That's never going to happen." It's just one more issue. I think feminism has opened up much more, and it's a world issue. It's not just a well-to-do American issue. And one of the things that concerns me a lot, and that I find interesting here, is here, Holden, we're discussing oppressed peoples, the hot spots of the world particularly, and we can talk a lot, if it really sort of push it at people, repression in Central America, repression in South Africa, repression of gay people in this country. But I think I can say, I think I can say without contradiction that the largest group of oppressed people worldwide is females. You know, from female infanticide in many countries to bride burning in India so-called female circumcision, although it's really female mutilation in certain parts of Africa. And there's just so many issues. It's even in places like Central America or South Africa, you have men being detained, being kidnapped, being tortured and murdered, and you have women being detained, being kidnapped, being tortured, raped and murdered. I don't see that issue coming up here, and I suppose it's because it would be pretty threatening to men, you know, make them pretty defensive, and I'm sorry about that, because I really would, I love my male friends, I love them to pieces sometimes, and I would love to be able to discuss issues like this, about what's important to me and what concerns me as a woman, without making them feel like what's important to them as a man isn't important to me, because I think it is.
It would seem that in our present society, and Bill brought this up, the fact that there, in order to survive, you have to have two in the family working, that the Israelis have a pretty good answer to this, to eliminate a great deal of the trauma. And that is to put the children in the kibbutz and let them be taken care of in that manner, and take the pressure off of the marriage in this sense, or eliminate marriage.
I think you're onto something. No, seriously, I think a lot of one reason I think that. You know, most of the men are quiet. We can't say anything because she's right. Although I take issue, I think there's a lot of men who've been raped who never talk about it. I honestly do. But I think that one reason, a number of reasons, I think men are violent and whatever. Part of it is because men are still responsible for being, quote, the breadwinner. Amount of pressure to go out and make the most amount of money that we can. If we're working part-time at a McDonald's, most men don't feel good about it. We feel like failures. And I think that I just feel like that's a lot of pressure on men, and I think it makes us it's just sort of crazy sometimes. I don't think it's not a sane way to do. I think that goes back to the marriage thing. If there were more an equal sharing of marriage, meaning kids and the home and the whole bit, I really do believe that maybe men could tame down. We could tame down some of our aggression to get more and more and more.
You know, but that's not going to change, Vermont, until the structure allows it to change. When I was doing a job that I knew other men were making $14,000 more a year than I was. Now, is it because I was a woman, because I was single, or whatever? I was pulling my weight. Now, if that structure's not going to change, whether I'm single or married, if I were married, perhaps I could have been the main breadwinner with $14,000 more a year, but without that, I mean, that structure is built in there. At this point, it seems to be.
Go ahead.
Well, I was fortunate. A lot of times I earned more than my husband, and we both looked after the children, and it worked. But there was a family across the street where the husband deliberately stopped his wife from getting more education than he had, because she would have been able to earn more money when she got up there. So, I mean, the issue is there, but men, for the most part, I think, take that responsibility of expecting to be the one that earns more in the family. And they put themselves in that.
Well, Robert Bly talks about men being pushed out of the home that women really don't want men there with the children. Women really don't want men there cooking and that kind of thing. And that men are basically pushed out of the homes. When they're there, nothing they do is enough. They don't take care of the children well enough. They don't cook well enough. They don't clean well enough, you know, that kind of thing. And I think there's a certain amount of truth to that. I think, and this goes back to the differences thing, respecting the difference in each other's way of doing things.
You know, I meant to say at the beginning that I feel the biggest issue I see is not some of this role changing, but the fact that women are being allowed up a bit, but they fit into the man's world and carry on that world in the same old way. Whether it's in the church, I mean, the comments about the women in the military, women shouldn't be in the military, they should men, right? Or we have a daughter who's a doctor, and she doesn't like the way they do business, insensitivity to it. And the challenge is going to be for her to do something about that. In other words, we got a series of values, competitive values, and law of the gun values that are destroying our nation, destroying people's lives, and women, I'm putting the big glove, women, I think, have the value system, the sensitivity, to come into that world and make it a different world. Right?
Mm-hmm. I agree. I feel like women are coming to me and saying, basically whining, saying, look what you've done, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I really think that there are more women, you know, there are more women than men. I think two women can get together and say, you know, we don't need you. That's what it's going to take. I think women are going to have to say, look, okay, you got the hospital, we'll start a clinic. You know, that kind of thing. And basically just bypass, you know, the male power structure, the white, and do it.
But they're stopped from doing that. For instance, in many places, the AMA is trying to get midwives out of the hospitals because they're threatened by that that alternative.
Yeah, it's true. I'm not denying that. I'm just saying that's what you have to do.
Well, maybe we just need a lot of Uzi submachine guns, and that's what it takes. Because it's you're going to be blocked at every. Well, it's just very frustrating.
I agree with the revolution, but not with machine guns. But I do think women need to get together and organize and be able to say that we're going to do something about these power structures.
Yeah, they gotta stay home long enough to cook my dinner.
That's a problem.
Jan, you seem...
Well, I was just going to comment that I really do agree with you that it looks like the pain is going to be that we either bypass it or keep our mouth shut about the conditions of the that we find in our communities, because it structure is almost too powerful for us. We can't get in and change it. Maybe not fast enough if we're thinking about survival issues, if we're thinking about saving even the last remnants of forests out here. We may just have to go out and all of us sit under trees and become spotted owls before they notice that we don't have any old growth forests, but just a few trees. It may be that we'll have to do some very dramatic things, like starting clinics and saying to the American Medical Association, get out of here, we're going to have to do it ourselves. And that's what I don't see in the women's movement. You see, I don't see that. And I call myself a feminist. And I am a mother and a grandmother, never worked outside the home much. And I still feel that I'm a feminist because I have no other place to put how I really feel. There is no other group, except for the feminists, who are calling the tune, or who are just naming what the problem is. The religious feminists are excellent. And the best religious magazine that I've seen in a long time of religious feminists
comes out of the Pacific Basin called In God's Image. And women from all over the Pacific Rim, India and so on, are writing about the struggles of women in every country. It is no longer our issues we talked here tonight, but if these are issues that are all over the world, as you pointed out very well, it's an international problem. It's a international problem of survival of women and men.
And I feel the same way about marriage. I don't think marriage has worked for years. And you hear any woman you talk to will complain about her marriage. And nobody seems to be happy with it, yet everybody goes through it and has these big weddings and these big ceremonies. Everybody's all sad and disappointed when someone gets divorced. And it's like, but you talk to people and no one's happy with it. And it seems to me that if women want an alternative, they should just, men are numb to women talking to us. We really are. You know, we pass it off, they're just whining. You know, that's what we do, we go on about our business. Well, I feel like it's up to women to just go about their business and do what needs to be done and leave us standing, you know, holding the ball, saying, what is this? What are we gonna do, you know? That kind of thing, you know?
Were you gonna say something here?
Well, there's one comment over here about putting the children in a kibbutz, whatever a kibbutz is. where I work, and this is actual fact, the young generation, that is the one that has small children now, I think that their ideal of solving problems is both have jobs. And just as soon as possible after a child is born, you put them under somebody else's care. And I think that we're going to have to start, if we're going to have all this equality and all this dual, both working and everything else, it makes me sick to think of it, but I think that's where we're going. And I think you might as well face it. If it goes on like it is, we'll end up with the state, like they did in Russia or somewhere, raising the kid, and I think that's the way we're going. And I don't see what you can do. You're working that way. Everything you're doing is going to push us that way.
But it's the economy. It's not just women who just want to work. I mean, you have to work. It's no longer a choice. What I see is the big problem is that America has lost the ability to take care of each other, to view ourselves as a community. Everything is an individual thing. It's your kids, it's your house, it's your job. And until we can look at ourselves as a community, we're going to continue to have homeless people in the street. We're going to continue to have unwed mothers with children that they can't feed and can't raise, broken homes, marriages that don't work, because the communal thing is dead in America. I mean, it's every person for themselves. And to be capitalist, you capitalize on someone's hard luck. Someone loses their job and lose their home, you zoom in there and buy that home real cheap. You know, that's how the American system works. And so, you know, until something is done where there's a community connection made, I don't see it getting any better.
Yeah, in relationship to that, I mean, it's not that the people, both people have to work. It's an attitude that they both have to work. And you let industry dictate how you work. That is, you say, okay, I will accept working from 8 to 5. I will accept this. I will accept that. If you don't want to do that, don't do it. Work so you can both rear your children. Work 5 hours a day. Rear, have one person home rearing the child 5 hours a day, and the other person home rearing the child the rest of the day. I personally reared my children, both Fran and I did. I was in, and I would never give that up. I think that that was a wonderful experience. Most males are not able to do that, but I don't know why we let our society dictate how we go about our work.
You sound like a man who's made a pretty good living. I bet if you had a couple who were both making minimum wage at their jobs, that wouldn't be an option for them.
When I did this, I wasn't making very much money. Made very little money. And so, but I was able to do it. But you see what I'm saying? It's up to us to decide whether or not we're willing to let industry, in quotes, define how we work. And that's what we've done.
Well, we're how we live. And the bottom line is that, seems to be, that if roles are changing and male-female relations are changing and society in general is changing, that we should have a hand in the direction in which it changes, and that means taking control and putting in a lot of effort.
But it is... Oh, sorry.
You've been waiting, and I want to give you a chance.
Oh, I was just going to say, as an older person, I think it's sad that the young generation, not all, but the thought comes out that marriage doesn't work anymore, and so just live together. Living together will still produce children, whether you're married or not, there's still going to be children, so there'll still be the problem of who's going to raise the child. And I think a lot, this is my personal opinion, a lot of why the thought is in that marriage doesn't work goes back to us as women. I think maybe a lot of women have forgotten to instill in their children that marriage was instituted in the Bible, and you marry, you know, the Bible says you marry for life except, you know, for proven adultery. We, in my generation, way back 50 years ago, we married with the thought that it was forever. There was just no thought in our home that, well, like today, I think the media has done so much damage to our younger generation. All you have to do is look at television, read books, look at magazines. And the thought is out there for kids today. We get married if it doesn't work, you know, and they talk about this one having 7 husbands, that one having 4 husbands. This is in front of the children, and it takes away this marriage institution that was placed in the Bible for us. And I think that's one of the great problems. The second great problem I see from my specter way back here in the Golden Age is that America's gotten very materialistic. When we were young, we were so glad to have a little tiny apartment and very little furniture. We thought we had a king's ransom when we had a little bachelor apartment. Nowadays, because I have sons and I see what some of the young people want when they get married today, they want a house and they want a car, they want 2 cars. I think America has become so materialistic, and there again I blame the media. The successful people with all the things that money can buy are the ones that are placed up as role models, and I think that's really sad.
I'm conscious of the time. Jan, you
have a comment? I think someone else out here wants to make one, so I'll defer.
Hi, my name's Susan. And there came a day in my life I had to take responsibility. I couldn't blame the media. I couldn't blame my family anymore, although I did take a look at my inventory through my family. And I really believe that through the Bible, the sins the past generations did catch up with me. But I'll keep it real short, but I do believe I have the chance in my lifetime to break that chain. And I can also offer that to my daughter. I can't make her do it. And it's interesting because I do have a lot of 18 and 19 and 20 year olds running through my life right now because of my daughter's age. And I see them repeating the mistakes of their parents. Mm-hmm. I think it's not intentional. It's that's how the children are brought up. And we do all have a chance to break that if we take the responsibility to do that, whatever it is. And it may be creating a better family. It may be creating job opportunities for ourselves. But I quit blaming other people and start taking our responsibility.
Obviously, you can take pride in being a good teacher.
No pride.
Jan, is your comment?
Oh, I don't know how to make it brief. It was just partially in response to Glenn, and then yours is kind of addressed it too. I'm not quite sure how to put it. And Catherine earlier saying about the structures of society is that there is a great deal to change about our value system. And that was one of the points I made earlier about equal value to work and jobs done, which isn't happening, and I don't know how it is to happen. And in some ways, we are all an oppressed society, and we're all suffering under a vast system of oppression, and it's really hard to see how to break out of it. Also ties in with a lot of what Verlon said. Anyway, in the interest of time, I won't try to elaborate.
We do need to come to an end. I just want to thank you all for your willingness to speak and listen to one another, and we hope that this kind of conversation will continue.